Welcome to Talking Success, the podcast series that focuses on everything fintech. I'm your host, Aaron Franks, and each week I'll be joined by a series of experts in the field who have a wealth of knowledge to share. It's time to meet this week's guest, so grab a coffee and let's start talking success.
Hi again, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Talking Success. I am thrilled to have Mpol Siddiqui with me today from Bankserv. Mpol and I have met a couple of times, actually, at a few different events. I think the last one was the rebrand of PayFast, I think, a few weeks ago in Cape Town. So it was good to see you there. And there's been loads happening in his world and in Bankserv. For those of you who are listening from outside of South Africa, which I know there are plenty, we're going to give you an overview in terms of what Bankserv is, what the new product and rapid payments means from a sort of South African context, and delve into that in some detail. But before we do, I'd love to give you the floor. Give us a bit of an intro, who you are. Bankserv, again, from a sort of people that outside of South Africa may not know who Bankserv Africa is. What is Bankserv Africa? Who do you serve? And how's the setup? So kind of over to you.
Yeah, good morning. I'm not sure if I should say good morning, or I guess to people are watching from all over the world. Yeah. So good morning from South Africa. So my name is Mpol Siddiqui, and I'm the head of real-time payments at Bankserv Africa. I've been in payments for more than 15 years in both in pull and push payments, and my recent foray in push payments has been with Bankserv Africa, but previously I've worked at one of the leading banks in South Africa, looking after push payment rails, so card acquiring, card issuing, and all of the whole payments acceptance and payments issuance ecosystem. So yeah, I think that's a little bit about me. So Bankserv Africa, maybe just to provide some context, it's an automated clearinghouse in South Africa, the leading automated clearinghouse in Africa. And we do both push and pull payments. So we of course do EFT credits clearing and settlement. We do EFT debits clearing and settlement for the South African market and some SADC markets. And we also do card processing for a number of banks in South Africa, both from an issuing processing and acquiring processing. So that's the Bankserv Africa. It's a company that's been around in South Africa for over 50 years. Last year, we had a huge milestone of celebrating 50 years of the existence of the company. And has been evolving all forms of payments over the years. In the early days, Bankserv Africa, people have forgotten about checks, but was also a processor and a clearinghouse for checks. We introduced what we call statutory switching in South Africa, which is the ability to withdraw from an ATM from one bank's branch to another interoperably without any hassle. So it's an organization that is really at the cornerstone of SA payments and facilitates SA payments on a daily basis through connecting our bank customers, our participating bank customers across the SA market. So yeah, it's a pleasure to be with you. I'm looking forward to taking what's in the future, what we recently launched, which is the culmination of the repeat payments program, which is referred to as PayShop.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, we're going to get to that in a minute. To give people some sort of idea on sort of volume of transactions, what do you process kind of in a day or a week? Have you got sort of some idea in terms of scale you can give our listeners?
Yeah, I think I could give you maybe top of mind that some of the annual volumes that we process. So if you just look only at just RTC, which is the real time clearing service, on an annual basis now we're doing just over 340 million transactions. I think in its totality, Bankserv Africa in 2021 or 22, but just don't know, we processed just over 5 million transactions across all the various rails. So, and you'll appreciate that in terms of volume, we do it all of the, debit payments, both push and pull rail payments. We do it cash, ATM cash withdrawal. So that's also in our volume that we process. So it is any payment irrespective of rail that is processed in South Africa will touch our one of our various switches that we run for the various payment rails. So it's volume, I think from a volume perspective, very much north of 5 billion in terms of holistic volume. But I think what excites us is on the new modern instant payment rails, where you start seeing the adoption of things like RTC, where you're seeing growth on a year-by-year basis to a point where we've now done over 350 million transactions in a single year. Which is a huge milestone on our part, and I think it lays the foundation quite nicely for where we see the low value rapid payments ecosystem called PayShap, where we think it will go from a volume perspective.
Let's talk about that. That was a good segue, right? So PayShap, I think it's got a huge amount of sort of coverage here in South Africa. But again, for people that are outside of South Africa or may have been away for the last few weeks and not been onto social media or read the news, what is PayShap? How does it work? And why was it designed?
Yeah, so PayShap is, I'm sure people would have ran a lot around the Rapid Payments Program, right? Which is what kicked off in South Africa about late 2019. And that's where we started with this whole modernization journey for EFT credits. And along the way, I think we always saw the need that for that universal acceptance, universal visibility, we will need to have a brand in the market that consumers, customers, and the line can associate with. So when you see PayShap, what PayShap is basically our rapid payments brand in South Africa for instant payments. And it is, I think the exciting part about it is that it's also a brand that is changed. It's driven by the change in the way we are going to manage payments going forward in SA. Because it is the first payment rail where, as a South African community, we have shifted away from the traditional payments management process where it is truly in the, the sort of puzzle realm of management, in the PCH management, but actually say, if we were to have a national brand that people associate with from a payments perspective, that needs to be managed as a scheme, right? So, and again, it starts to take into account some of the thinking that our South African Reserve Bank's vision looks into to say, how do we modernize payments? How do we create visible brands that people can relate to? And at the same time, how do we start driving financial inclusion? So now, so PayShap is one of those, it's the first, scheme that the South African market has launched, domestic scheme, that will manage the rapid payments ecosystem in South Africa. So participants who participate in the PayShap scheme have a set of rules and standards that they need to adhere to ensure that there's not only consistency of service, but there is consistency of brand, consistency of experience, and over time, you'll start seeing consistency of CX, of customer experience, in the context of, making it simpler for people to transact, to access the service within their banking ecosystem. And one of the things what's always reported to Outlay at the beginning is that we've also not built a standalone application, right? So the PayShap brand lives within the participants' channel, so within the participants' brand. So it's and that's aligned with the scheme thinking, right? In that if you think about in the pool payments world, schemes are not standalones, right? They are brands that sit on the access mechanism, they sit within the accounts that you take up that supports those brands. And in the same context, consumers will use PayShap, will not find PayShap as a standalone application on its own, but actually it will be an application that is a brand application that's embedded within the channels of the bank participants.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Well, I saw it pop up on my F&B app sort of a couple of weeks ago, and it's kind of embedded finance. So we had Clayton from Okesh on a podcast a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about sort of embedded finance, and I guess this is a great example of that, but from a very different sort of angle. Talk to us about the user case. So who is this designed for now, and how do you see PayShap evolving over the next, 12, 18 months?
Yeah, I think if you think about it, so the original sort of use case or commercial case for South Africa venturing into this world of real-time payments, I think we're very much a country that is challenged with the high, usage of cash in the payments ecosystem, right? I mean, there's statistics that have been done that talks to the sense that an average South African will do anywhere between 90 to 110 transactions in a particular month. And normally, probably 10% of those are formal transactions, so they're in the formal economy and they're tracked, and processed, whilst the balance is done in cash. It's done in cash moving from one end to the next. Now, where we saw the opportunity with real-time payments was that how do you build a service that is as good as cash, that has the same instant gratification that cash gives you when I take out whether it's coin or a piece of paper, and I hand it over to you, that you get that instant gratification. So the use case at launch is really around low value payments, right? To look into, and that's why we've also brought in, not only because of fraud prevention measures, we've also gone in with a very, very low item value at launch. So at 3,000 rand, which is, just a few, just over $100, I think, if it's not more than that. And that really tries to encourage the ecosystem to say, how do we allow and capture those less than 100 transactions that people are doing today and bring those into the formal economy? How do we support the micro entrepreneur that's in the street corner, selling goods and services on a daily basis, but can be able to access digital payments through this platform. And that's why something like a proxy, which is embedded into the PayShap ecosystem, right? To say where we've enabled the ability to link at launch, we are using a mobile number as a proxy, and some banks also have launched with custom proxies, but targeted mainly to formal businesses, where as a user in my banking ecosystem, as you rightly say, PayShap pops up in your application because it's up to date. You can then take the cell phone number that you have linked to your banking profile. You can then link that to PayShap, and that cell phone number becomes your proxy for PayShap payments. Now, I'm a street vendor, I'm a parking attendant, I'm a micro entrepreneur. I can now shift from a world where, I always expected to be paid in cash to a world where I can walk around with a lanyard with my cell number, showed there with the PayShap logo, and I say, yes, you want to buy this, fruits and vegetables, and this 20 rand, just send it to that number. Yeah. Right. And that's the thinking. So we think that target market of consumers, there is billions and billions of transactions that are happening there that the formal economy has not even touched. And we digitize those. You start opening up, and I think this is more for our bank customers, you start opening up a market of customers that probably they have no visibility to. right? For additional banking products that today they can't extend to those products because they have no visibility of the transactions that are happening. So I think for the micro entrepreneur, person to person payments, but primarily at low value, I think it's where we're going to make the biggest difference.
I've got a question on the commercial side, but just before we come to that, so to accept a PayShap payment, I need to have a bank account, right? Just to make that clear. It doesn't necessarily go to a mobile wallet. It has to go to a bank account. And at the moment, it's, you know, the sort of incumbent banks here in South Africa.
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, do you want me to clarify that a bit? So.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Yeah. At launch, and this is why I use these words, is that at launch, yes, you will need to have a bank account linked to the participants that are currently live, right? So the four banks that have gone live last week, and then we are taking on other banks in the later part of this year, and it's all about just program management and where each bank is ready. But I think the important nuance to make there is that as much as we refer to it as a bank account, how we've built the system and how the industry and the participants have supported the build of the system, the idea behind it is that it's a store of value. So that store of value could be a bank account. It is a bank account now, as we, you know, in the early days of launch. But in a world where you could have an intermediated partnership between a wallet holder and a bank, collaborating to provide access, technically, the funds can shift from, you know, one bank account to a wallet, as long as there is an intermediate sponsorship agreement that's in place and all of the technical integrations have been done and have been satisfied. So that's the thinking, is that the system is built with a view that on both sides of the equation, there is a store of value, and that store of value is regulated and accepted. It's just so happened now that at launch, what banks have made available is the traditional bank account. They can also extend the proxy linkage to a wallet, to a credit card account, to an asset-based finance credit account. It's irrespective, yep.
I given the account holder obviously has a bank account, the KYC has all been done up front, so it's seamless for a consumer just to be able to use the PayShap app straight from their phone without any sort of extra steps or KYC or anything like that. Is that correct?
So that part is covered by, you know, once you onboard and have a bank account, you've ticked off the KYC and the AML capabilities, and is now you are ready to consume the service.
Okay, great. And then there was a lot of hype. There was a lot of talk on sort of social media, specifically LinkedIn, just after the launch, sort of a week or so ago. And I think there were some people questioning the commercial model. Can you clarify what that looks like? Because I think there was a bit of sort of lack of clarity on sort of what that does, what it costs, who pays the charges. Can you shed some light?
Yeah, but and there lies the exciting part, right? I mean, I think ultimately, you know, South Africa has a very competitive banking ecosystem, and launching with four and further expanding into nine banks will make that even quite more competitive. So on day one, I think you did see the banks launching with completely different pricing approaches across the four participants, which is exactly what you need. You need a landscape where everyone takes their own competitive path, right? So to a point where we're sitting now, where the banks are truly encouraging the usage of proxies, and I think two of the banks have priced quite aggressively on proxy payments and payments less than 100 rand. You know, the one bank is offering it for free, while the other bank is it's free for 3 months, 2 months, and then it's going to be 1 rand for a proxy payment, right? So and the others are also finding their way around pricing in that level. But my sense is that, you know, if we truly want to drive massive adoption, massive take up, you do require this level of competitiveness, right? And we earned initially, I mean, I think things don't always play out the way you play. The program plan was to do a massive launch with all banks at once, but of course, not everyone moves at the same pace as the rest, and you can't wait for all the banks to be ready to take a service to market. You can then do it in drops. I do believe that when you have the full spectrum of 9 banks live in the market, you are going to see some very aggressive pricing to drive the level of adoption that we require, you know, and you see that. So I think this differentiation where you're starting to see free for a certain level of transactions, a very competitive price point for proxy payments, it's exactly what we need. But is it good enough? The market will determine. I think consumers always keep banks and service providers honest. You know, the take-up will tell you if you've got the right price point or not. Yeah.
And so just to be 100% clear, the pricing is set by the bank. It's not set by PayShap or Banks of Africa.
No, exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's funny. No. Just a quick analogy. So for everyone that's not sort of from South Africa, you've probably heard that we have sort of rolling blackouts here called load shedding. And there's actually an app, load shedding app. And I saw a few weeks ago that the owners of the app put a message out saying, listen, if you're going to rate us on Apple Store or Google Store, please don't give us 1 star. It's not us that's causing load shedding, right? It's Eskom. And all we're doing is providing the information. So there was people, you know, going on saying, you know, I think this is disgusting and how can you keep load shedding? And these guys were going, listen, we're just providing information. So you're providing the infrastructure for the banks to be to enable the banks to run rapid payments. Next question for you. In terms of technology, I don't want to get too deep into sort of architecture and what have you, but I'm a big fan of using blockchain, using sort of cryptocurrency as a utility, especially when it comes to cross-border payments. What's gone in sort of the back end of the PayShap? Is this built on a blockchain? Is this built on anything like a Ripple network, an XRP, or is this quite a different type of architecture? Can you give us any insight?
Yeah, and you're right. I don't want to step in the shoes of my CIO. I mean, he's probably the best place to tell you that. But sure. In a general sense, I mean, I think the one piece that excites me around the build for PayShap is that it's completely built differently from how banks of Africa typically deliver products for banking customers. I mean, it's a every payment rail in South Africa is, you know, on-premise hosted. It is physical plug-in for the banks to connect and consume the service, right? Whereas theirs has been built on an API-based approach. And, the first payment rail that we are cloud hosting, it might be, sound very, for those markets where this is normal. For us, typically payments were built, consumed and on-prem servers managed in that context. So whereas here it's cloud-based, we've very much used a it's built off the back of the Tata Technology Services technology. So the TTS solution is what we've deployed here in South Africa. So I'm sure many people are familiar with TTS banks. So that's the solution we've deployed here. And I think And what excites us is also that, of course, ISO 22022, capable and has been built with the view that the world will progressively move forward with not only proxy payments, but will also move forward with these corridors of real-time payments. So I think, what we have in place, is capable of as and when the market is ready, as and when things do evolve around cross-border real-time payments rails, it's capable of starting to consume that and exchanging those, because the standards of messaging are the same as what you see being deployed in other markets where real-time payments have been done. I think where we need to get to with cross-border payments is really, I mean, what makes it work, say, in the card world, is that you've got a network that's been in existence for north of 60 years, right? The rules and standards have been developed over the years, refined and agreed over the years, where we are in terms of electronic push payments is somewhere along the way, there's various schemes that are very much local, domestic focused in terms of their rule application and rules framework will need to agree on some universal network rules that will apply to facilitate this cross-border payment rails. You know, because we all come in with our different item limits. We come in with our different standards in terms of the release of funds. You know, so Is it all universally instant across the markets? How do you handle? Because I don't think the handling of currency conversion, you know, those are value-added services that you overlay onto a payment rail and dot, but it's agreeing on the network rules. That's where I think we'll need to get to. And of course, rightly you say, it is what technology do we utilize that is universal across all? You know, do you embed the crypto type technology as the standard that everyone sort of follows and you go from there? Yeah.
I guess one of the challenges about the cross-border payment, the instant payment on that side is, especially here in South Africa or many countries across the continent, we have exchange controls. So how do you satisfy, you know, Saab and SARS that, you know, this payment is for this purpose? So I don't think it's ever going to be, you know, I send the money from the States and, you know, in 3 seconds, it's going to be in my account. I think there's always going to be that that step in the process to verify sort of, you know, the source of funds and what the funds being used for and uploading your documents. So I guess there's some elements there that still need to be thought out. We've spoken about the benefit of PayShap to the consumer. Let's talk about the benefit to the bank, and then I'm going to throw in another spanner in the works as well in a minute. But let's talk about the benefit to the banks. What we've seen over the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, certainly in the US, has been, you know, obviously the collapse of a couple of the regional banks, maybe down to sort of liquidity. Does PayShap help with liquidity here in South Africa, or is that not really what it's designed for? Is this more with the consumer in mind rather than the bank? Or what's the benefit of the bank? Can you enlighten us?
Yeah, I think the liquidity question, I would say, is probably, if it's a five-step process, it is sort of step five. You know, it will get there. But I think foundationally, at a bank level, there's sort of two core components for me. I think the one is the modernization of the EFT payment rails within the banks and also at an industry level to have a modernized payment technology and replace that has been around for 50 years. So EFT credits, as we know them today, are being run on technology that has been in existence for decades, right? So the first big benefit is for a bank is, I think, in moving into this PayShap journey is, yes, you initially launch with low-value real-time payments, but, you know, over time, this will become your EFT credit solution, right? So there is scale, there is cost benefits, there is the ability to you know, for banks to orchestrate a payment services hub, you know, off the back of a technology implementation like this. And I think a lot of vendors that the sort of tier one vendors that offer to large banks, payments technology is that they now delivering it as a package and say, you know, here's your payment services hub. It's got EFT credit, it's got pool, it's got merchant management services, it's got card issue management services. Take it as a holistic solution, and over time you get the scale benefits and of course optimize your payments cost. So that's the one piece. I think the other piece is really if you execute your commercial case right as a bank, is that you can access the payment volumes that today you don't traditionally get, right? You don't see that. Yes, you might touch it through cash, but you don't see the amount of cash that recycles before it reaches back into the formal economy. So it's touching those. And the consequence thereof is once you access the billions and trillions that are dark in cash, you then bring in that deposit into your ecosystem, right? And mm-hmm. and that's then where I say the liquidity piece doesn't just happen overnight. It happens by doing a number of steps, right? You know, get your technology in check, get your customer proposition right, so your commercial case right, and then deliver on that. Then you will get a customer that will start receiving funds into your ecosystem, and not all of them will rush back into an ATM or withdraw that cash, right? They will get it. So you can then start extending other products to retain mm-hmm. some of that deposits that get into the ecosystem. So the big war, call it the commercial war that banks will and their partners will engage in, is not only do I want to be the bank that captures the most incoming payments, but I retain them.
It's interesting. So yeah. I don't know if you listened to the podcast I had with Dieter Erling a few weeks ago. And yeah. we were talking about, you know, I think South Africa is very proud of saying that 80% of the population is banked or has bank accounts. But the big challenge is that I think 80% of that 80% get a salary payment and the next day go to the ATM and withdraw the cash. So, digitization actually comes out of the ecosystem and turns back into hard currency. How do you keep that within the ecosystem? How do you keep that cash digital? This sounds like a kind of a solution for that. You mentioned two things there. Well, you mentioned a lot of things, but two things I want to pick up on. So you mentioned the EFT payments. Now, EFT is very popular here in South Africa. And there are some fintechs that offer EFT as a solution, right? We don't really need to name them by name, but there are quite a few. Historically, they've done sort of screen scraping. That's been the technique. That's now been outlawed by the Saab. Do you see them actually forming part of the ecosystem? I'm talking about specific EFT players here. Do you see them forming part of the ecosystem moving forward with PayShap, or do you think they're going to need to reinvent themselves? Because, you know, if you've got the rails there already that's built by PayShap, is there a need for another sort of, you know, a third-party EFT provider?
So it's a funny one, because I don't think a lot of people, when I should express my views, they typically don't agree with what I think. And it's because I think with my experience of having, you know, heading up a kind of acquiring business in one of the banks, I truly understand what happens when you deliver a solution to a merchant, right? So I think the headline solution for those players is that is that they do screen scraping, right? But at the same time, I had the opportunity to also challenge myself and put myself in the shoes of a merchant and say, ultimately, they're not doing the screen scraping or the EFT payment facilitation. It is a means to, they're delivering a payment solution to a merchant, right?
Yeah.
And that payment solution is an access to another wallet. So in my time when I had up an acquiring business, whenever I engaged with a merchant, I always used to ask this question to say, as a merchant, you have, you know, your biggest driver for turnover is accessing as much of the wallets that a consumer has as possible. So consumers spread their funds into, so traditionally we talk about debit card and credit cards. That's what we know. But I hold a wallet, I hold a rewards wallet. So this, I hold a normal wallet, mobile wallet, rewards wallet. I have an EFT account, so I hold an account. I could hold crypto. I could hold, you know, the amount of ways to pay are endless, right?
Now, absolutely.
How do I access that? So players like those, call it EFT originators or screen scrapers, as they're commonly referred to, I think provided an access mechanism to another wallet that a consumer had, which was called, you know, over the other cash, is called a current or savings account through an EFT payment. Now, I do see that they have a role to play going forward, because they built a unique value proposition there, because they have built a capability to reconcile EFT payments. Mm-hmm. Right? And even though we've landed PayShap, I still believe that they have a role to play in that, as long as they you know, banks are able to partner with them to call in, you know, regularize that EFT payment into some sort of an EFT API that talks to the payshop rails from an instant payment perspective. Because what they were doing today is that they were, you know, building the same technology and connecting it to four different banks to enable instant payments. Now they don't need to. They can partner with one bank and still extend the instant payment capability. But what they bring on the table for the merchant at the bank is the ability to reconcile and check out. And that's the biggest value proposition for a merchant is, I sold X, I'm able to reconcile it back to my line of business, and I'm also able to reconcile it back to my bank account to know that I have money. Right? So I've got security, release the goods here.
And the settlement, obviously settlement, yeah. You know, for merchants, especially SMMEs, right? It's not a case of I can wait three or 4 days for my funds to hit. You know, what I sell today, you know, dictates what I can buy in stock tomorrow, and then I can sell the next day. So, absolutely.
And in this instance, that settlement is instant, right? Now, these players will need to figure out how do they support the merchant to reconcile all of those immediate settlements that they will be getting, you know, in that context. Yep.
And then let's broaden it slightly from, you know, EFT providers to fintech. And I know that's broad, right? But if we look at sort of payments companies that operate, PSPs that operate here in South Africa, I think there's a lot of excitement about PayShap and instant payments and rapid payments. Where do you see the industry evolving over the next couple of years from a fintech perspective, so not necessarily a bank perspective?
Yeah, I think rapid payments, in my view, so PayShap, I think it's providing this opportunity really to innovate around EFT payments. We're delivering convenience, we're delivering speed, we're delivering an ecosystem and infrastructure that drives, you know, this ability to do rapid payments, right? And money to move between accounts and move fast. But at the same time, we're introducing complexity, we're introducing chaos, we're introducing in an industry that already had established rhythm of settlements happen the next day, you know what, I pull up everything into one batch and then I process it. So I think, and I go back to this point, you know, PSPs, fintechs, and the like, the value that they've always delivered in payments has been around reconciliation, simplicity of payments, simplicity of customer experience. And I think if fintechs, you know, use the time to observe what has been lended and start looking into where are the gaps that industry has not delivered, but I can use this infrastructure to enhance and deliver a better customer experience and deliver a better, merchant experience, I think that's where the opportunity lies. So if you think about how card PSPs have evolved over the years, right? The rail has not changed, right? The rail is still the same. It's still a full rail, you know, a few rules here and there. We've constantly, you know, incrementally introduced, whether it be 3D secure. What fintechs have done is they look at those innovations and say, where are the gaps from a merchant experience and a consumer experience? Yep. So if it's in 3D secure, how do I make it better for the merchant and still comply with 3D secure? So better checkout experiences, you know, over time you start building stored card values into the ecosystem, which eventually becomes tokenized payment solutions and the like. So I see the very same thing playing out with this infrastructure where there are a lot of clever people out there, more clever than me, that are going to find gaps in what we've landed and actually going to, for, you know, quote unquote, but exploit the gaps for better commercials, better solutions for consumers. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, it sounds a phenomenal journey. I mean, kudos to you and the team for pulling this off. I know it's probably not been easy, and there's been lots of sort of burning the midnight oil, but you guys have done a fantastic job. And, you know, we're certainly excited about, you know, what impact that has here in South Africa to sort of the world of payments and, you know, financial inclusion and serving the underbanked, because obviously, you know, we've got the bank population, but they aren't necessarily underbanked. So how do you provide more services and, you know, financial products to people, especially to micro entrepreneurs and people in lower income brackets? How we get them sort of more involved in sort of the world of financial services? So really, really exciting. Thank you so very much for your time. I always enjoy chatting to you. So it's nice to chat to you on screen as well as in person as well. Any sort of final thoughts? Is there anywhere people can look you up or look up Banks of Africa or PayShap? Because I know obviously PayShap's a brand of Banks of Africa. So where can people get some more information?
So thanks for that, Darren. I mean, I think it's, as you say, it's nice to be talking now with a solution that's live, as opposed to the last couple of times we've spoken, we were sort of talking about what's still to come. So having a solution that's live is quite exciting. So from a PayShap perspective, there is, we've got a website, payshap.co.za, so payshap.co.za. People can reach there for more information. And PayShap, so we've also have a LinkedIn site for PayShap.
We'll be adding all of the links into the bottom of this this podcast as well. So if anyone likes more information, please feel free to follow the links. Well, thank you so very, very much. Always a pleasure. And thanks for the insight. We wish you the very, very best of luck. We're kind of championing your cause and everything that the Banks of Africa and PayShap are doing. Again, thank you so much. Enjoy. Well, it feels like the end of the week already. I know it's kind of Thursday, but we had Tuesday off, which kind of threw everything out. So enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I appreciate it. Yeah, it does feel like the end of the week.
With this media calling. You take care.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of Talking Success. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this fascinating discussion on all things fintech. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and have gained some valuable insights into the ever-evolving world of finance and technology. A huge thank you to our guests for sharing their expertise and providing us with some amazing insights. We certainly couldn't have done this without them. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting conversations with experts in the field. Until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep talking success.